With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. Tracking global corruption and threats that undermine our security.
Through the Looking Glass.
This is Through the Looking Glass with Scott Wheeler on TNT Radio.
Welcome to Through the Looking Glass. I'm Scott Wheeler, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Thank you for joining us on the powerful TNT Radio. Just Friday, Silicon Valley Bank, a large lender to digital startups and the technology industry, was taken over by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which took over on Friday based on the fact that the Silicon Valley Bank was insolvent. Now, many perhaps don't recall this, but the last financial crisis in 2008 began when Chuck Schumer, somebody who had a U.S. Senator, Chuck Schumer, who had no business talking about financial things because, A, he's never worked a day in his life in the financial industry and is mostly a clueless left-wing hack, went out and started talking about IndyBank in California and not even in New York, in California. IndyBank was based in California. Schumer ran out talking about how insolvent it was, and it triggered an IndyBank meltdown, which led to the Bear Stearns failure and other financial crises that followed, all because Schumer thought it'd be a good idea to make the economy look bad to help Obama get elected in the 2008 election. Now we're seeing real consequences. And according to the Wall Street Journal, one of the things came days after this, Silicon Valley Bank takeover came days after the Silvergate Capital announced it's liquidating its bank. Cracks in financial systems emerge whenever interest rates rise quickly after an easy credit mania, and the surprise is that it took so long. That's the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal predicting something perhaps worse to come, which is when you look at the 2008 meltdown and you compare the stability of the country at that time to the stability of the nation now, another financial crisis could cause major problems for the United States. We've never been more polarized in history since the Civil War, and maybe even more than the Civil War. It is a very dangerous and volatile mixture we have here. We have our enemies sharpening their swords in China, testing hypersonic ballistic missiles. And I saw one Newswire headline yesterday that said China is getting further ahead of us in the hypersonic ballistic missile space for national security. And unfortunately, I had to point out that the U.S. doesn't even have a hypersonic ballistic missile program. If we do, it's only just begun and it's in its infancy stages. We're in a very dangerous position right now, the United States is, and we are faltering, and it's because we've elected corrupt leaders. We've elected corrupt leaders who have the ability to unfairly influence elections to help themselves get elected and reelected. We have a news media that is once considered liberal 40 years ago, is no longer liberal, but a Democratic Party operation, information operation. 85% of the press corps is made up of Democrat Party apparatchiks, not liberals, as they want you to believe. They love it when right-wingers call them liberal. It's a compliment. They're not liberal. They're party apparatchiks. They're part of a corrupt fascist, in fact, what I've labeled the most corrupt institution in the history of Western civilization, the Democrat Party. And on the other hand, we have the stupid party, the Republicans, who refuse to do anything to stop them or hold them accountable or even talk about the corruption. We watched for 4 years while Trump was president as the Democrats manufactured a lie about Russia collusion. And in the 90s, you had sitting Republicans and Democrats who were still in office, Democrats who defended Bill Clinton accepting millions of dollars in illegal donations from communist China while he was decontrolling strategic weapons technology to China. And Republicans didn't say a word. Didn't say a word while the Democrats were making up lies about Trump and Russia collusion. As I pointed out many times during that period, why doesn't somebody point out that if every lie the Democrats made up about Trump and Russia were true, it pales by comparison to what we know Bill Clinton did with communist China? There was nobody denying that that happened. They were just defending it. Democrats said, well, it's the system's fault that Clinton committed treason. It was the system that made him do it. I mean, insane. And yet no Republicans ever brought this up or attempted to hold a trial and say, well, Democrats, now that you're concerned about collusion with a foreign enemy, how about we talk about China again, the deal you tried to cover up? But that's why they're the stupid party, because they failed on so many levels. And it's unfortunate, but that's the facts. It's the fact of the case. We don't have any other options here. Right now, we're going to talk about January 6th, which is also part of the corruption. As many of you know, I was a reporter on the scene at the Capitol on January 6th. I showed up there because I expected Antifa to riot because I'd been covering Antifa riots. I figured there'd be some conflict there and somebody should be able to report fairly on it. And it ended up being much worse than anybody thought. And then you had the Democrats seizing the opportunity to turn it into a quote-unquote insurrection. Right now, we're going to bring on Tyler Nixon. Some of you may be familiar with his work. He's been an attorney for Roger Stone, who was one of those prosecuted during the Democrats, I guess we could call it the Democrat Inquisition. And Tyler Nixon is a former U.S. Army veteran, I assume a fellow graduate of the Benning School for Boys, Mr. Nixon.
Yes, that's correct. Good to be with you, George. Good old Sand Hill.
Sand Hill, that's where I graduated.
So you're sure not
Scott
old
Scott Wheeler, by the way.
Oh, I'm sorry, Scott, I'm sorry. Gosh.
That's all right.
It's earlier out here in Denver than it is there in Washington.
Very familiar with Denver.
Good old Sand Hill next to a good old Harmony Church, which
Harmony Church took some training at Harmony Church. Yes, it's where they didn't have air conditioning.
Oh yeah, hoo-wah. I went through in the winter, so we had plenty of air conditioning. where exactly? I was in Alpha 4th of 36. Went through in 90 to 91.
Echo 3-1 of the first ITB, and in the early 80s.
Oh wow, jeez.
Then awesome. On to 3rd Infantry Division, which was based at the Fulda Gap during that time.
Yep. Yeah, I was assigned to the 3rd ID actually when I got to Frankfurt, and my buddy, who I'd been literally from MEPS all the way through airborne school, all the way to Europe, got assigned Berlin, and I didn't get assigned Berlin, and I was like, Bad Kreuznach? No, I don't think so. And I, one of those moments in life where you seize the initiative, and even as just a PV2 at the time, and I went into the E4 clerk who. Hands out assignments. I said, hey, listen, my buddy's going to Berlin and I got 3rd ID. Do you have any more Berlin assignments? And he just typed it up and boom, Berlin.
So you went to the Berlin Brigade.
I did. It was a fateful decision, a fateful intervention on my part, where I just, you know, sort of took the initiative. It's funny because I remember when going through basic or through, well, one station, basically what it was, and they were handing out the designations, you know, B-11 Charlie, 11 Mike being the you know, the mechanized Bradley fighting vehicle deal. And I had airborne airborne training in the offing, and you know, obviously there's no airborne 11 Mikes. So I mean, I literally, and I don't think people could believe it, I went to the company commander of, you know, the one station basic training and said, I'm walking out if I get assigned 11 Mike. I said, I signed up to be 11B. And there's no guarantees, you know, that they'll give you airborne training, but that doesn't mean you'll be assigned or even designated, you know, an airborne assignable MOS. And sure enough, they gave me 11B. So that's, you know, I got my wish.
It had changed quite a bit. It had changed quite a bit during when I went in. There was a new MOS called 11X. X-ray, and it was, you cross trained 11 Bravo, which was ground infantry, 11 Charlie, which was 81 millimeter mortars, and 11 Hotel, which was Stinger and Toe Dragon, gunner. Toe okay. gunner. Yeah, and right. so I went yes, through all three.
Wow.
And like you, I requested 11 Bravo and was granted that, but nice. Went to a line battalion and, the Fulda Gap. But then I was part of a unit that got one of those who got selected for special training in, because of the Bader Meinhof gang was posing threats and taking shots at high ranking officials. So we trained on counterinsurgency at that time. So we were going back and forth from the Fulda Gap to other places, destinations that might be still classified, even though I would suspect they've all been unclassified since, but
divulged.
Yeah. And yeah, if not declassified, divulged.
You took part in some reforgers because, I mean, those were obviously yes. huge, you know, events across Europe. We heard about them, or when I got there, I'd heard about them, but I mean, obviously then we've stomped the same, you know what I'm talking about when
yes.
It filled Flecken, Grafenwehr, Hohenfels.
Wild, I mean, Flecken, Grafenwehr, Hohenfels spent part of one winter at Grafenwehr. Very cold.
Godforsaken places. I mean, four seasons in a day. Just, you know, it was unbelievable. And just, you know, everything's a hill. Everything was uphill. It was literally like the old trope, you know, I had to walk uphill both ways. But you know, great memories with my infantry buddies. And I don't know how much you stay in touch with your, with the guys you serve with. We definitely had from the, I was in Bravo Company 6th Bat of the 502nd Infantry, which is basically 4th, 5th and 6th Bat of the 502nd were the Berlin Brigade, which the 1st, 2nd and 3rd are the 101st Airborne. So we were sort of quasi air assault, but, just, you know, a whole bunch of buddies that I've stayed in touch with over the years. And, you know, some of the best friends you'll ever make in life is when you serve, you know, when you've been through those.
Absolutely.
Those sleepless nights, you know, just humping through the woods, through the brush and freezing your tail off and just trying to keep from going insane, basically trying to stay awake, digging fighting positions where there's just boulders, literally, you know, a couple inches below where you break ground. And it was great. It was the, you know, worst 2 years and the best 2 years of my life, just being there in Germany.
So, very good description, worst and the best, but we're speaking
it's
with
great
Tyler.
To look, it's great to look. I was going to say, it's great to look back on.
it is. Yeah, it's much better in the rearview mirror. We're speaking with Tyler Nixon. He's an Army veteran, an attorney, constitutionalist, advocate, writer, technologist. We're going to be talking about the January 6th events and the hearings, the January 6th committee, and the videotape, the newly released videotape. First, why don't we take a short time out, and we'll come back with Mr. Nixon after these messages.
You should hear what Chris Smith is talking about.
I raised some serious questions about the growing ego of active President Volodymyr Zelensky. Well, U.S. intelligence officials have raised similar questions about whether Ukraine was indeed responsible for blowing up the Nord Stream gas pipelines in September last year. But of course, the Ukraine president, the White House, and even anonymous CIA sources to various news agencies claimed it was the Russians. It had to be the Russians. But I always have been stumped as to how this occurred, as to why that would happen when Russia could simply turn the tap off on this gas to Germany, to Europe, at the Russian end of the pipeline. That would punish Germany for supporting Ukraine. You don't have to do it surreptitiously, you just do it deliberately. Here, we're turning this off to you, Germany. Back off supporting our enemy. Then you don't have to go through the danger and the difficulty of mounting an operation whereby you intend to sabotage the pipeline midstream. Why would you want to go down that very difficult path? You could simply turn the tap off.
Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Info at your beck and call.
Accurate, clear communication.
And it keeps changing every day.
Just tell your smart device to play.
TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Through the Looking Glass. I'm Scott Wheeler, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Joining us on this broadcast is Tyler Nixon. He's a former U.S. Army veteran and an attorney. He once represented Roger Stone, the accused Trump advisor who was ultimately pardoned by President Trump. And we're just breaking into these videos that were released by the Speaker of the House and have been airing on Fox News, showing that there was a lot less drama inside the Capitol than was portrayed by the January 6th committee, Mr. Nixon. How do you assess the difference between the Democrats' account of what happened and the media's, their apparatchiks and the media's account versus what actually did happen?
Well, Scott, first of all, I want to say your intro was just spot on. I couldn't agree with you more on everything you said, frankly. And I feel like I should be interviewing you because you were there on the ground. I was in Washington, but saw the writing on the wall there. And frankly, you said you were there because you thought Antifa would be rioting. Well, I think that may partially be true, given the what we know. I think, or we can pretty much presume, I think quite credibly to be agents provocateur from the federal government, potentially, possibly working with Antifa. Who knows who they were willing to work with? Intelligence, I think, operatives and so forth who decided to turn the mass gathering, the protest, if you will, into riots. And then, of course, playing right into the hands of this pre-planned defamation campaign that the Democrat crime syndicate has been running to replace the Russian collusion hoax, which is this insurrection nonsense narrative that they've used to essentially imprison without bail numerous Americans in gulag conditions in the DC hellhole jail there. And I think what we see in the video that basically just debunks and on so many levels. And you know, for those of us, I'm sure, and you were there, for those of us who knew or you know, can see this kind of thing and spot it a mile away, when the Democrats run with you know, whatever narrative they've cooked up to rewrite events and to reframe events, really, to support a ridiculous, absurd, again, defamatory story that they will use and run with and attempt to embed and pound into the American collective political consciousness. There was, you know, clearly not, this is, I mean, an unarmed insurrection, first of all. Let's, I mean, give me a break. We know, of course, that the Trump supporters are Second Amendment, you know, defy you to find anyone of Trump supporters who isn't a pro Second Amendment, very, you know, strong Second Amendment supporting gun rights supporting person. And, you know, these people, I'm sure, in their homes back around America could have taken up arms easily against and in mass numbers if they wanted to, and could have really, you know, staged an insurrection which would have overthrown the government at that point. Because, you know, let's face it, I mean, the Capitol Police, you know, there's no force that they had on hand that could have even save 100 or 200 armed, heavily armed, let's say, Americans who, if they decided to get in there and really, you know, do an insurrection, it would have been decisive, I assure you. But of course, it wasn't, because no one brought weapons. No one intended to. But none of the, I think, good faith Trump supporters and people there for the right reasons had any intentions of it turning into what it was, even just on the actual level of being just maybe a riot or an out of control protest. And certainly had no intentions of overthrowing the government. I mean, this is lunacy.
That certainly that aspect for sure. But as I previously reported, I did see people, and later after the fact learned there were people who were Trump supporters that would perhaps engaged in what you would consider riotous activities. But insurrection, no. And were there other people who were provocateurs and Antifa? Yes, there were. In fact, there were people in Black Bloc busting out windows. I actually saw this and took photos. There were people who were in Pelosi, who was then Speaker of the House at the time, Nancy Pelosi's office, who walked out with things from her office. I photographed them. Who have not been arrested, almost as though they were sent out to present a narrative. They were wearing Trump stuff, but they did not look like Trump supporters. And yet they were held a bottle of wine that it actually did look like it would have come from Pelosi's office. It was like a 92 commemorative bottle of wine from Northern California that commemorated the San Francisco Democrat National Convention that had been held there. There was a signed baseball. And these two, this young female and male, held these trinkets up, told me they were in Speaker Pelosi's office. They had these things, and there was videotape of them in the office, and neither have been arrested so far. And they know the name of one of them.
There was that one who was a mentally ill, I guess, woman who, I guess, took a laptop and said, you know, I took it and posted some very crudely written admissions to this and, you know, badly misspelled. And either, you know, this is someone who's either mentally ill or clearly not a typical Trump supporter. And, you know, what I found, I remember seeing video, I don't know if you'd seen this video, where it was from inside and a sort of an anteroom where they had breached through a window. And there was some woman giving directions who, when you look at the people who came in through that window and the way they were acting, they looked to me like Antifa soy boys dressed up, you know, not as Trump supporters, wearing, you know, facial coverings and sort of like, okay, what, you know, it struck me as like, this is not, I mean, if you've been to a Trump rally, if you've ever seen Trump, you know, people who come out to see Trump or come out to support Trump from all around the country, you know, travel thousands, hundreds, if not thousands of miles to do this. They just didn't fit this profile of this sort of surly, aggressive, you know, 20 something you know, again, soy boy types that you see in Antifa. And it's like you can just almost tell because I've been to certainly plenty of events and met, you know, thousands of Trump supporters. And there's just a certain I don't know what it is, almost like a vibe you get, you know, from people who are Trump supporters or people who are, you know, oriented towards liberty, towards the Constitution, towards, you know, frankly, a non-corrupt government, I guess is the best I can say as I can state it. And these people were definitely that I saw in these videos, and many of the people I saw just pushing forward definitely did not fit that profile. Now, yes, I do, and I'm sure you acknowledge this, there were some sort of maybe more little more rough around the edges, let's just say, guys who were Trump supporters who probably got swept up, you know, carried away on the front, you know, by just the mayhem.
That's an appropriate way to describe it. They were swept into the aggression. A lot of them were young people, but there were also people who were causing this that were not, there's evidence that they were not. We're speaking with Tyler Nixon, an attorney. We're talking about the January 6th release of video from inside the Capitol that shows a different narrative, interferes with the narrative created by the Democrat Party and presented to the American people by their news media allies, or quote unquote news media allies.
Propaganda machine.
It really has become this. And I've covered this in the past on this broadcast. Starting in 1992, the media went from being liberal, mostly liberal, to being Democrat Party hacks. And from that day forward, it's gotten progressively worse and worse. Now I'm looking here at CNN's coverage of the release of the other video, and it's saying Capitol Police have continuously warned that release of all security footage from the Capitol could pose a potential security risk for the building. CNN has reached out to Capitol Police for comment. They say that Fox News, who used the footage in an attempt to downplay the violence and defend the pro-Trump mob, claimed he had Capitol Police review the footage before airing it. And this is the news media, which, as you recall, Mr. Nixon, for decades, we know that they loved, during the Cold War, they loved getting their hands on top secret material that would endanger assets, American assets abroad, and they loved publishing it. You could hardly ever keep them from it. There is rare the times when the New York Times or the Washington Post or any of the new network news would refrain from publishing something that was top secret that they'd gotten their hands on. They loved doing this, and now they're suddenly defenders of the state and state security. This is the most bizarre period I could ever recall in my entire life. Watching this from inside and out as a 25-year veteran investigative reporter, I've never seen a time when the media actually defends the security, the state security, and claims, even when it's not true. What they're saying is you can't reveal where the cameras are in the Capitol. Well, anybody from any country can walk into the Capitol and see for themselves. You're not keeping anything secret, and you're not divulging anything. And the cameras can be moved, if that were true, if they're hidden cameras, they can be moved. And there's no way to avoid being videotaped in the Capitol anyway. And everybody who walks in there, whether you're a Russian spy, a Chinese spy, and in this case, I believe there's probably some Chinese spies actually serving in the Democrat Party in the Capitol now. And these are the people, the media, which has downplayed that influence, is trying to pretend like there is a real concern for security, national security, about showing these tapes from inside the Capitol. It is almost unmatchable and throughout history to have this level of propaganda and engagement coming from the Fourth Estate. And I rarely say things this with this much intensity, but we're seeing it. And it is shocking. And I know you're seeing the same thing, Mr. Nixon. You've been closely involved with this. What is the media's motive, do you think? What could they possibly have in this, you know, after constantly during the Trump years? And I'm by predicate, I should predicate this. I'm not a Trump fan, but he's much better than any Democrat. And so we have to defend him on that basis. But what the media that revealed top secret material in order to get Trump when he was president is now defending the security state outright lies that by showing this video we're exposing our you know some kind of encouraging threats. What's your opinion about why they're motivated to do this?
Well, first of all, call me Tyler. I would say my dad is Mr. Nixon, but he was Dr. Nixon. But and you know what we're seeing, Scott, unfortunately, is the definition that I would, and you use the term, and I've used it for years now, actually, really since Trump came into office, but ironically not because of him. Fascism is the merger of large concentrated corporate or monetary interests with the state, you know, and it's a symbiosis. So sometimes, you know, the state serves those interests. Sometimes those interests serve the state. We see it, you know, most blazingly in the big tech, you know, the media platform, the social media platforms being co-opted essentially by hardcore leftist, you know, authoritarian ilk. But what we're seeing is the sort of the fascism in its earliest stages come to life, and the first corporate, you know, large concentrated monetary interests to be co-opted or merged essentially with the state are the media, you know, the communications, telecommunications companies. And you're absolutely right. I mean, this is not news media anymore. This is pure state propaganda. It's not even state propaganda. It's Democrat Party propaganda, which, you know, deep state propaganda, I guess you could say, because there's a merger there. You know, only the Republican Party not being much better, at least in terms of, you know, again, I'll take the Republican Party of my my friend and, you know, former boss, in a sense, Ron Paul, as well as Rand Paul, you know, and other Republicans who have been standing up and saying we're not going to yield this party to the Mitch McConnells and the Mitt Romneys and the, you know, the others of the world. But, you know, you're talking in extreme terms, but I mean, it is asinine. You almost can't come up with enough superlative words to describe how ridiculous and just how diabolical it is, what their attempts to, again, as you said, defend these ridiculous assertions about security, you know, and this sort of like clutch your pearls kind of reaction. Whereas, you know, years ago we had at least a news media complex of sorts, or organizations that would, yes, I mean, there were reporters who would sink their teeth into a scandal or corruption on either side of the equation that are now absolutely apologists, defenders, and really facilitators of this corruption, and for one side of the equation. I mean, you know, you don't regard even corrupt Republicans don't necessarily get the sort of luxurious, lavish praise and defense, and almost gaslighting or gaslit level.
You're precisely right. That's the reason why the Democrat Party is the most corrupt institution in the history of Western civilization.
I call it the Democrat crime syndicate.
Yeah, well, it's because the media will police the Republican Party, and so they keep. But if the media were really liberal, like they love to be called, they would have dismantled the Democrat Party years ago corruption. But instead, they focus only on the Republican Party, making it, and that's the reason why is the stupid party, as I call them. Why they are not as bad as the Democrats, but you see many of them that actually cozy up to the Democrats. And, you know, some have noticed in the past that you have many Republicans in serving in office that are actually Democrats, but there are no Democrats who are secretly Republicans.
You're so spot on with that. I mean, that's the point that I've often brought out and said, listen, you know, the Democrat Party is 100% compromised now. It is totally gone. They've purged any sort of, you know, I mean, I'm surprised somebody like Joe Manchin, I mean, would remain if he wants to represent certainly the people of West Virginia. But I mean, you don't have any of the so-called moderate Democrats, the blue dog Democrats of the Clinton era were purged decisively. I mean, if there was like an internecine war, whereas, you know, Bill Clinton could be considered more of a sort of pro-business, not just an outright fascist, you know, authoritarian type of politician. Hillary Clinton would be the hardcore leftist, autocratic, you know, almost royalist, totalitarian type in that family. And, you know, let's face it, her ilk won out. They won you know, Bill Clinton probably just shakes his head now. I mean, he goes along with it, you know, he plays, but I mean, he can't not see how nutty these people are and how far gone they are. Into just the radical leftist lunacy, and it's just run amok because the fact of the co-opting of the corporate media, and you know, and I would point out that, as you mentioned, Republicans are held to a higher standard essentially, which only sharpens our game. And I'm speaking as someone who will not abandon the Republican Party to the ilk of you know, the McCainiacs and these people like Steve Schmidt and others who grotesquely would adopt the visage of Abraham Lincoln for their proto-Democrat, you know, subversive smear operation. The Lincoln, I mean, it's disgusting that they would. Lincoln, we should raise his spirit and sue for defamation and, you know, misuse of his name and likeness and image.
Well,
and
right, stuff. When you look at what they did, they made the conscious decision to support Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden over Trump,
who, unbelievable.
You know, despite I understand why people have problems with Trump. I mean, he did a lot better than I thought he would.
He's imperfect.
But on the other hand, you've got Hillary Clinton, whose entire adult life has been beyond college, has been committed to helping herself to whatever perks she could get, whatever bribes they could get. They were caught repeatedly. There was a pattern of behavior with the Clintons, starting from way back when he was Attorney General of Arkansas, where they built people around them constantly. The whole Whitewater, we heard during the 90s, for example, that Whitewater the Clintons were found innocent, which is a big lie. They were not found innocent. They were bribed. They did receive the money. All of that is a matter of fact and public record. They did receive the money. What the special prosecutor didn't think he could prove that they knew they were bribed, but they were bribed. The point they couldn't make was with the part they didn't think they could get a conviction on is whether or not they knew that they had been bribed. That's a far different distinction from being innocent.
And thanks to faithless pseudo quasi allies, specifically Lindsey Graham, who made it all about Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky and the dress and sex, and just played right into the Democrats' hands about, oh, this is just Republicans, you know, obsessed with sex scandal, not the incredibly extensive corruption that the Clinton machine turned the Arkansas government or brought to the Arkansas government through, you know, Webb Hubble. And I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, it was like a crime syndicate running a state. I mean, MENA Arkansas, you talk about the Whitewater, that was tiddlywinks compared to the things going on in Arkansas at that time, the murders committed for Bill Clinton. His medical examiner, Fahmy Malik. I mean, this guy was like literally people were being shot in the back, you know, six times and being ruled suicides, run over on train tracks on the premise that, oh, they decided to fall asleep on the train tracks. Yeah, that's plausible.
Yeah, that was the story of those two young boys who were found in the tarp, covered in the tarp. And the medical examiner said they had smoked marijuana and fell asleep on the train tracks. It was such a tragedy.
Lord.
But yeah, we're speaking with Tyler Nixon, who's an attorney, U.S. Army veteran. We're going to take a short time out. We'll come back with our final segment on Through the Looking Glass on the powerful TNT Radio right after this.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
If you listen to singer Cyndi Lauper, who also happens to be a gay icon and who is reportedly married to a man, you'd be led to believe that the LGBT community in this country is headed towards extermination. Recently, she was asked this question here. Listen carefully to both the question and the answer.
What do you make of all the anti-LGBTQ legislation that's making its way in bills across the country?
I believe you don't stop the fight. Equality for everybody or nobody's really equal. This is how Hitler started. You know, just weeding everybody out and then finally he, you know. I don't think it's a good idea what they're doing, but, you know, you just have to keep fighting for civil rights. I guess that's the way it is in this country. Started out like that, didn't it?
To the questioner, making sure that K through third grade school kids are not taught to question their sexual identity and keeping drag shows out of their school libraries is not anti-gay. To Cyndi Lauper, how dare you compare the treatment of gays to throwing people into ovens and gas chambers? You are one sick chick. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
I've been driving for most of my life and I've always been a safe driver. But as I've grown older, driving has become more challenging. Intersections feel busier. Driving in peak hour traffic and travelling longer distances is stressful. And driving at night or in bad weather is risky. Even small mistakes can be costly. Look for the signs. If driving is getting harder, there are alternatives. Make a plan to stop driving on your terms. Don't stop driving by accident. Think Road Safety, a message from the Government of South Australia.
This is Through the Looking Glass with Scott Wheeler on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Through the Looking Glass. I am Scott Wheeler in Washington, D.C. We're speaking with Tyler Nixon. He is an attorney. He's been integrally involved in many of the defending people from the press corps and from the corrupt Democrat Party who have been accused, such as Roger Stone. We're talking about the media and the way they've handled and been on defense with regards to the new revelations about what happened inside the Capitol on January 6th, labeling it an insurrection and pretending like there's an element to what we're seeing now, Tyler, and that is, If you recall during the Benghazi scandal, the Benghazi investigation, what happened at the very beginning was that the Obama administration, they formulated a lie. They said it was caused by a videotape. But they went a step further then, and they pretended to believe the lie that they had manufactured. So it wasn't like they put out a lie and said, this is a possible reason why this attack on the U.S. embassy in Libya was attacked. This is a possible reason or a likely reason. They said it was the reason was this movie that an anti-Islam movie that this guy had made in California. And then they turned and pretended to believe that the lie was true. And they did it in ways like taking U.S. tax dollars to fund ads in Muslim countries with Clinton and Obama denying, saying, we're sorry, that movie doesn't represent our values. So they took an extra edge, an extra step to pretend to believe the lie, which is exactly what we're seeing with regards to January 6th. They made up the lie that there was an insurrection, and now they're pretending to believe that lie.
Well, the darker side of that is great analogy or analysis of that is that the darker side is that, do you remember that they fully prosecuted that filmmaker who made the supposed film, the film that supposedly sparked the attack on Benghazi? So this man was like, you know, hounded.
They prosecuted the filmmaker, you know, and
They ruined his life on a lie. And this is exactly the next step. In other words, the stage where we've broken through to a new level of corruption, where not only will they perpetuate and stick to and defend to the end and have the media defend for them, media, I keep calling them the propaganda machines, propaganda voices, mouths, defend this lie, but they will actually use the corrupt the justice system and corrupt the DOJ at minimum in order to be, you know, weaponize it essentially against whoever it is the target, you know, in order to justify the lie, or another to rationalize the lie, or to, and it's just, it's writ large now. I mean, my gosh, that was one man who's had his life destroyed because he was, you know, used as a patsy essentially for the Benghazi, the corruption surrounding that. Now you've got, again, thousands, hundreds, if not thousands of good people who are just, you know, including the Proud Boys. I mean, frankly, you can think what you want. I know someone who was pretty close with you know, Proud Boy here in Colorado, who's, you know, he was definitely involved at the upper levels. I know Gavin McGinnis is a friend. I've met Enrique Tarrio. You know, he's a little bit, I don't know, I you know, he obviously has some murky sort of ties. But overall, though, I mean, it is laughable to think the Proud Boys, compared to Antifa especially, are some sort of dangerous or much less. I mean, this is how ludicrous and the asinine levels we've reached, where you have an organization that's run by a Latino, essentially Cuban, I think it is. I think Tarrio is another, and has many Black and Latino people, but they call it a white supremacist organization. It is lunacy. In fact, my friend here in Colorado is Mexican, and he's like, yeah, I'm a white supremacist. I mean, he's, you know, ironically, it's just a joke, but you know, it's one thing to advance that ridiculous defamation, but it's another to take it to the level of prosecuting innocent people in order to justify or to perpetuate your political or partisan advantage and the lie that you've, I mean, these people are evil. They've gone beyond just the realm of corrupt. They are evil. I mean, this is the work of wicked people who absolutely have no soul, in my opinion. You know, that's a spiritual statement, obviously, but you know, I'm sorry, but there's another way to really cast the dimension of corruption and of just degradation. And I mean, these people are repugnant and they are vile. And frankly, you know, we need to drop the pretense that any of these institutions that have been thoroughly corrupted, including the FBI, CIA, and the alphabets, that they deserve any sort of automatic either credibility or, you know, any presumption of good faith, because they have been, they've demonstrated, and especially the FBI, in my opinion, has absolutely demonstrated it is so thoroughly corrupted that it is no longer a viable institution representing the American people, or that is an extension of we the people and the government, you know, by and for the people, that it is now a subversive element of the Democrat or larger deep state perfidy and corruption.
And speaking of evil, the yesterday on The View, Jane Fonda was on. And the discussion was about abortion. And Jane Fonda went on The View and said pro-life politicians need to be murdered because of their views on abortion.
Yeah.
Then the very heavy set Joy Behar with the piggish face and a big mouth said, "Oh, you're just kidding, right? Because we can't say that, because they'll use this against us," she said. And then Fonda looked at her like, "No, I'm not kidding."
Yeah. And so Hanoi Jane is proof. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, this is evidence, more evidence that they're allowed to say and do whatever they want, including encouraging murder, which is that's a crime. You're not allowed to say that on that. This is The View is on ABC, I believe, which is a network. They're governed by laws. You're not allowed to encourage murder on a network. It's not even a First Amendment right.
at that.
Yeah, mass murder at that. But that's what we are dealing with. That's the mindset we're dealing with. If a right winger had said this on talk radio, that we need to round these, actually, I'm not even going to say it. Use your imagination of the inverse. It would be national news on every single network, and it would be covered nonstop.
Yeah. And we know this for a fact because they have to make up. They have to make up the defamation. They can't even use real. We have so much. I mean, you know, Hanoi Jane is proof positive that, you know, any committed leftist gets stupider, more stupid with age than wise. You know, and she's just a spick. I think even Hank Fonda, you know, would probably be appalled at her, at the level of her just disgusting, just repugnant. I mean, attitude towards a fellow human beings. You know, regardless. I mean, we're not. You know, but then again, these people are calling Trump supporters Nazis. I mean, talk about minimizing. Nazis did, the actual National Socialists, I would add, you know, let's call them what they are, National Socialists. I mean, that really just, I mean, the inner incoherence of their defamation, their smears, is so blazingly obvious, I think, to anybody who has half a brain, half wit, that it's just, I mean, you know, you can't take these people seriously anymore. I mean, you know, their hypocrisy is just so, I mean, it's almost an embedded character trait, and they think nothing of it. I mean, there's no shame anymore. And that was another thing I think the Clinton ooze brought to Washington was the death of shame. You cannot, it used to be before the Clintons, if you got into a scandal, left, right, center, whatever, Democrat, Republican, you were going to be held up for ridicule or for whatever, for exposure and drummed out of, out of officialdom, so to speak. You know, you would not survive. I mean, you couldn't. Now, you know, and this generally applied to Democrats. I mean, you know, Jim Traficant, although he's not exactly a leftist, as well as someone like a John Tower, you know, Bob Packwood. I mean, that type of stuff. You know, people they definitely were held up. You couldn't get away with this kind of stuff. Now it's like, forget it. I mean, they just take it as, they don't even acknowledge it. They're busy making up fake stories and fake defamation about Republicans. As they commit egregious and grievous crimes, in my opinion, corrupting and weaponizing our government against the citizenry, co-opting and standing idly by while, someone like Fonda stands up and since she's not a politician, she can say what they all think and want and get away with it and with impunity. And it's just, we have to drop this pretense, as I've said, earlier, we need to live up to the standards that the Democrats bleat and their media, propagandists bleat about, oh, the Republicans, blah, blah, blah. You know, it was like Wasserman Schultz when she was haranguing Matt Taibbi at the hearing just a day or two ago. And I don't know if you saw that. Made money from this and Elon Musk. And I'm like, sister, give me a break. I mean, you people have benefited. You had the entire Twitter, corporate structure was based on just literally hardcore Bay Area leftist lunatics running around censoring in a secret process. Roger Stone, my friend Roger, being the first, one of the first people, of high profile, just to be completely deleted, not censoring content, censoring human beings entirely, blotted from the face of the earth as far as Twitter is concerned. And she's whining that Matt Taibbi, who's a leftist himself, well, he's a liberal, a true liberal, and, Yeah, he's principled. I agree with his sort of utopian probably vision for what can be done, because I mean, it's like, do you need any more evidence of how corrupt power is? The more it's concentrated and consolidated in a centralized state. But she's haranguing him. It's like, again, they have no problem turning on their own as soon as they become apostates or heretics, in any way vary. And strafe or much less expose the absolute lies and deception, deceit and perfidy at the center that is the core of this corrupt crime syndicate posing as a political party.
There is a great quote that it's been attributed to Joseph Goebbels, the Nazi, but it's actually comes from somewhere else. And it goes, if you tell a big lie enough to keep repeating it, people eventually come to believe it. The lie can be maintained only for such time as the state can shield the people from the political, economic, and or military consequences of the lie. It thus becomes vitally important for the state to use all its powers to repress dissent, for the truth is the mortal enemy of the lie, and thus by extension, the truth is the greatest enemy of the state, end quote. I've never seen a more true example of this than what we're seeing in our own country right now. As we come to the close, let me thank
real quick, Scott, that the only difference between the National Socialists of Germany and those running this country today, unfortunately, is that the Nazis of that then were honest about who they were.
Yeah. Thank you, Tyler Nixon, for joining us today from Washington, D.C. For Through the Looking Glass on TNT Radio, I'm Scott Wheeler, signing off.